Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beats. I personally take Super Beats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at intelligentbeats.com. That's intelligentbeats.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla, special holiday edition. Hope you enjoyed your Christmas and this nice little hiatus between Christmas and New Year's, if you're listening to it contemporaneously. We've got a bunch of questions, and our first one with Layla is about macrobiotics, correct?
Yes. This question comes from Marlene. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, wish you could do Q&A shows more often. Never miss a show. Thank you, Marlene.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah. I mean, it seems to me like we're doing them pretty often.
Yeah. But she wants more.
Okay. Every day.
So Marlene says, as for your discussion on the macrobiotic diet and Michio Kushi, please comment on the following facts. Aveline Kushi, the wife of Michio, succumbed to cervical cancer after having received conventional therapy. Michio Kushi was also treated conventionally for colon cancer at age 81. Their daughter also had cancer.
And by the way, he was treated about 10 years ago, and he's 2004, I believe, and he is still alive as of our last checking. So 10 years after colon cancer, he's a colon cancer survivor, and I think he's
probably into
his 80s.
That's great.
Yeah.
This means to me that the macrobiotic diet they espouse neither prevented nor cured their conditions. Consider that the Japanese, on average, live well into their 80s. I look forward to your response.
Well, couple things to be said for that. And I have experience in the macrobiotic diet because I personally followed a macrobiotic diet for many years. I was macrobiotic for at least a decade and vegetarian for almost 15, 17 years. Long time. In the beginning of my... Actually, during medical school and the early years of my practice. And even before medical school, during pre-med. So, the belief that a vegetarian diet is a cure-all, I think, is misguided. I think it's very beneficial for many things, but one of the tenets of macrobiotics is that it virtually was a panacea diet for everything,
yes.
For cancer, for heart disease. And the whole this was also in sync with the low-fat mania of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
This diet was popularized in the 70s and 80s. And
I remember this as a teenager, really, all about the macrobiotic
so
diet.
It wasn't just low-fat, it was virtually no-fat. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you could use a little sesame oil or something, but no animal protein.
With your brown rice and your sauerkraut.
Right, you know, and then you'd see dietary counselors who would tell you how much oil you can have, either very little or none at all, you know, and depending on your condition, your status, your pulse, whatever. So ultimately I found that the science didn't back that up so much. And my own personal experience led me to find that I was a little weaker, my skin was drier, I had more allergic conditions when I was following that kind of diet. And I think my health has been improved since I espoused a more omni diet. And I include red meat in my diet, preferably organic. I continue to eat lots and lots of vegetables, and that's, I think, the beneficial thing about the macrobiotic diet. It is true that Aveline Kushi died of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wife of Michio Kushi, and she had the benefit of the best macrobiotic counseling. One excuse that's sometimes made about Michio developing colon cancer is that, it's like do as I say, not as I do, that he, as the head of the movement, was not always adhering to the diet.
Yeah.
And that he also was a smoker, which is, he admitted to being a smoker.
Yeah.
His
son says in an interview that his father didn't adhere to the diet for the last 10 or 15 years due to his travel schedule and all of that. So, interesting.
So, at any rate, I think that that does not discount the certain benefits of the diet, although... the diet is not a panacea against cancer.
Yeah.
I have to say that I have, in the early days when I was using macrobiotics to treat patients with cancer, I had some extraordinary successes, particularly with prostate cancer. prostate cancer, I think, responds well to a macrobiotic type diet. I had one patient where we did x-rays before and after the macrobiotic diet, and the comment of the doctor who was reviewing the x-rays, the urologist, was, there must be some mistake here, because this is before and this is after, isn't it? And it's like, no, this is after and this is before.
Wow.
So, in other words, the bone metastases that this guy had shrank and virtually disappeared, and he felt marvelous. And so there really is something to be said for it in certain cancers. Sometimes, does it save lives? You know, I recently did a podcast with about a doctor who is setting up a vegetarian demonstration project in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And he was inspired to do this because he was a young medical student. He began practicing, and then his father ended up developing pancreatic cancer. So he, you know, recognized the limits of conventional medicine.
Yeah.
And he happened to hear a podcast by, not a podcast in those days, a radio broadcast by me, was inspired to put his father on a macrobiotic diet. And his father had great quality of life for like months and months and months. He was supposed to check out, you know, within 2 months. His survival was negligible. He had great quality of life, and then he died. But he did succumb to the cancer, but he had great quality of life and energy, life prolongation. He was spared the harsh effects of the chemo and whatever other treatments.
When you administered the macrobiotic diet, was there a supplement regimen along with that?
No,
or was it just
supplements
the diet?
Are out.
Supplements are out.
They absolutely are against supplements.
Wow.
Yeah, they
so
very
all nutrients from the
foods,
diet.
From foods itself.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because they consider supplements artificial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Marlene.
So it is a paradox, and, you know, there are no simple answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fascinating. Our next question is from Michael. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Can you please settle the argument of whether the single component such as resveratrol versus ingesting the entire extract or red wine is more biologically effective for the body? If the latter is more effective, can one take 2 or 3 glasses of red wine, evaporate all the liquid, you know, the water and the alcohol, using a dehydrator, and eat the solid portion? I want to preface that first by saying all the research on resveratrol was on much more than 2 or 3 glasses of wine. It would be the equivalent of several bottles of wine.
Right,
the rodent studies and so forth.
Right.
Hmm.
So
I don't know. I'd rather drink the wine, but we can't drink that much wine.
Well, you know, another way to look at it is there are other helpful compounds in red wine.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, alcohol itself is somewhat cardioprotective to a certain point. That it has a blood thinning effect. And most studies suggest that whether it's alcohol, beer, wine, hard liquor, that small amounts are beneficial for the heart. Too much, of course, is bad.
Yes.
And
nothing raises triglycerides like alcohol. Too much alcohol. So,
well, especially sugary drinks, you know, like umbrella drinks.
Yeah.
And, you know, damage the liver, which is another, you know, effect. But so the answer is we don't know. We for example, wine has tyrosylbene, which are other beneficial compounds that are in wine, other helpful polyphenols that have not really been studied or identified as well. So is it more beneficial to use this isolated compound? the research that has been done at Harvard by Dr. Sinclair looking at isolated resveratrol or synthetic forms of resveratrol has been disappointing. GlaxoSmithKline bought a patent on resveratrol as a potent anti-aging substance, something for heart disease, Alzheimer's, you name it. It was supposed to be like the blockbuster drug of the 90s, actually of the early 2000s. And it has not panned out. And their investment of about $700 million has not been recompensed with any kind of patentable drug.
Mm-hmm.
So it still falls upon us in the natural products industry to suggest you take resveratrol because they're... The evidence is more about the natural substance than the synthetic revved up versions of it.
Mm-hmm. He follows this with another question about vitamin C, kind of along the same theme. Does a person require less vitamin C or even much less vitamin C if it's taken as the citrus extract due to the possible synergy that may exist between the vitamin C and the other components of, you know, all the flavonoids, the rutin.
Look, clearly there's some, you know, it's like vitamin C is sold in various forms, like vitamin C with rose hips. There are citrus flavonoids that have beneficial effects in and of themselves. They're flavonoids or bioflavonoids.
Yeah.
So, yes, the answer is bioflavonoids have separate mode of action that may be synergistic with vitamin C.
And it's,
you know, vitamin C can be synthesized. It's a chemical process by which you just get pure ascorbic acid.
Yeah.
And, you know, that may be less beneficial than when you eat a fresh fruit.
Okay. Michael, so don't dehydrate your glasses of wine. You could have a glass or so, and that would I would still take a resveratrol supplement.
I think a French person might scoff at that question. It's like, oh, these Americans, they are so practical. They do not enjoy the benefits of the delicious Bordeaux.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, you know, we're Puritans over here. We just want, you know, the health benefits without any of the joy or any of the gustatory pleasure.
Yeah. Do we have time for another?
Please.
Great. This one comes from Arlene. I have a question about soy. I had an allergy test taken, and it said I was allergic to soy protein. I want to take some pills that contain soy lecithin, like milk thistle, and all other pills to help my brain.
We
Do you think I could take these?
We get this question a lot. So what's the answer?
The answer is you should be fine with the lecithin, because that's the fatty portion. The soy protein is the thing that she's allergic to.
Many things are soy-derived. For example, vitamin E is often soy-derived. And that doesn't mean that if you have a mild allergy to soy that you're going to cough, sputter, and, you know, turn your toes up if you take some soy-derived vitamin E. And many products now are microencapsulated in nanospheres made of lecithin, you know, like bioavailable curcumin. For example, the type we use, Mariva, there's a declaration there's some soy in it. And people are mortified, like, oh my goodness, I'm allergic to soy, or it's going to kill my thyroid because soy is anti-thyroid. And the answer is, it is so minuscule, and it's really not the protein or the allergenic part.
That's true.
And unless you have anaphylaxis, you know, which is rare to soy, don't worry about it.
Right. And you have to also keep in mind the portion. You're not having blocks of stir-fried tofu and glasses of soy milk. You're taking this in the form of a pill.
Correct.
So you don't have to worry so much.
Right.
That's perfectly fine. Thank you, Arlene, for your question.
You know, just even to further elaborate on it, there are products that are genistein and diadzin. These are the products that are designed to, you know, reduce hot flashes. And they may not have that much soy protein either. They have extracted the protein and they deliver the diadzin.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, we've got this very interesting coming from Angel. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Is the optimal level of 25-OHD the same across the board for all races?
Oof, great question.
Yeah. Have there been studies that show some groups, for instance, African Americans, may benefit from a lower range compared to the rest of the population?
Beautiful question.
I need to find out where I came across this information, but it is stuck in my mind, and I wanted to get yours and Dr. Hoffman's opinion about it.
Okay, this vitamin D thing is becoming more and more complex.
Yes.
And recently there was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine which stated that there's actually a different carrier proteins for vitamin D in African Americans, I think I'm getting this right, than in Caucasians.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know to what degree this is a perfect correlation, because the American population is very heterogeneous. There are African Americans who are immigrants from Nigeria who are, you know, purely, they have no Caucasian blood whatsoever. Excuse me.
They do have, genetically, I suppose it's naturally selected, that they're able to have much more bioavailable vitamin D.
Right.
Therefore, they can have a lower level.
The level is lower.
Yeah.
But it's more bioavailable.
Yeah.
So, in other words, what they're saying is that we should correct for a person's race. Now, as I said, the problem is, what if you get someone like Barack Obama? Who is, well, he's precisely half, because he's half African and he's half, you know, a blonde Caucasian. So he's 50-50. many African Americans, people considered African American, maybe, you know, one quarter, one eighth, you know. And so can you make a statement like that, that it's absolutely racial? The problem, too, is that African Americans have less vitamin D because their skin color is dark.
Yes.
And two things happen when your skin color is dark. One is you don't care to tan because mm-hmm. your skin's already dark. So, like, right. unless, you know, we foolish white people, you know, who go out in the sun and bake so we can be darker, if a person's already dark, they're not going to go out in the sun and bake.
Right.
Number one. Number two, the skin is darker and it protects against the UV rays, which activate vitamin D. And so there's a multiplicity of reasons that African Americans have low vitamin D.
Yeah.
African Americans have certain diseases that are related to vitamin D deficiency. They have a high rate of osteoporosis. They have a high rate of hypertension. They have a high rate of diabetes. They have a higher rate of prostate cancer, much more deadly in African American mm-hmm. men. And maybe that's genetic, but maybe wow. it's due to vitamin D. This is it's a whole new area. That's a very intriguing new area.
Yeah. So we have yet to see what emerges.
Right. Okay. So then the other question is, let's say we get an African-American patient who comes in with a vitamin D of 30. We would consider that suboptimal because we shoot for 40 or 50. Mm-hmm. Do we have to get that to 40 or 50 in that African-American patient?
Great question. Yeah.
That's to be decided by, you know, new scientific advances that we need to keep on top of.
Yeah.
It's all brand new science.
Thank you for that question,
Angel. Good question, Angel.
Yeah.
I think Angel called me on the radio.
Uh-huh.
Angel, I think, lives in Chicago, if
okay.
I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And first of all, when I saw the name, mm-hmm. because they put the name up on my computer when I'm broadcasting from my studio, I wasn't sure it was a boy or a girl, but Angel's a male in this
Could
case.
Be. Yeah, yeah. There are some women who call themselves Angel.
Right.
Depending. Okay. Let's see here. We have a second question from Angel about venous insufficiency.
Well, Angel's racking it up.
She's racking it up.
She. Right.
Yeah. My 68-year-old mother is status post bilateral total knee replacement 2 years ago. She did not have both done at the same time, LOL.
Right.
She cannot stand or walk very long because her ankles tend to swell. Her doctor diagnosed her with venous insufficiency. She just started fish oil and is taking a multivitamin. Any other supplements, other treatments you'd recommend for that?
For venous insufficiency, we have to...
it's genetic, right?
Well, no, but, yeah, but there is a genetic component. But it's also possible that after knee surgery that it's worse because
yeah.
of a disturbance of the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
The things to use, Venus Optimizer by Jero, which contains diosmin and butcher's broom, and, you know, a variety of synergistic ingredients. I think it has asparagine, another powerful bioflavonoid that prevents leakage into the tissue. This, I believe, was a question that Angel posed to me on the air, if I'm not mistaken. So
okay.
I already answered this to our radio audience.
Okay. Thank you for that, Angel. We've got a question from Judy. Hi. Every time I go to Mexico... and it doesn't matter where in Mexico, there is always one day that my stomach is not right. Very loose bowel movements. We stay in lovely places with good filtration water systems. I'm the only family member that seems to have this problem. I take probiotics every day, all year long. I eat healthy. My stomach is fine all year round, except one day in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this happening only to me?
Okay, well, it has to do with genetics to some extent and the microbiome.
Yeah.
And some people have a microbiome that's very resilient to change. You know, mm-hmm. if you stay in a hospital for more than 12 hours, your microbiome will begin to reflect the bugs that are in the hospital.
The environment.
And you begin to reflect the bacterial composition that is, you know, associated with that area or that even that microenvironment like a hospital.
We're picking up the microbiomes of anyone who's in the room, apparently.
Well, the foods that we eat, their foods are not completely sterile.
Yes.
Nor should they be.
Right.
And
our immune system needs something to
do. And so, we especially see this in people taking antacids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, protonics, Nexium. Excuse me, my voice is giving out.
Yeah. I wonder if Judy might benefit from maybe changing over her probiotic from time to time.
Sure.
Or something like that. Maybe different strains or higher strains.
Here's a tip, too. If you go to a foreign country, drink wine. because wine is a little bit of a natural antimicrobial.
Yeah.
Especially red wine.
Yeah.
And can offer some protection.
Anytime I have sashimi, I'm having sake with it.
Okay.
You know?
As a disinfectant?
And I like sake.
Okay. Okay. So the... Okay, so the next time you're like doing sake shots, I'll know because it's only for medicinal purposes. There's no, just like the guy who would. What if you dehydrated the sake?
Right.
No,
dehydrated
it won't work that
the
way.
Sake,
no.
Yeah.
Because I don't want you to have any, you know, frivolous. It has to be purely utilitarian. No enjoyment.
No enjoyment. Dehydrated. Okay. Thank you, Judy. All right. This comes from, don't have a name here, but it's about Eustachian tube dysfunction. I'm a 33-year-old female diagnosed with this after I realized my right ear would block up, reminds me of a head cold, after exercising and resulted in decreased hearing, especially out of my right ear. My primary care said it could be due to the intensity of the exercise and inflammation that's occurring. He indicated fluid buildup, no infection, and said if it gets worse, he would have to refer me to an ENT to have my ear drained. I've stopped exercising for over a year because of this. Oh, no. And due to possible mitral valve prolapse,
well,
hey, you should never stop exercising because of mitral valve prolapse.
No, it's actually that yeah. Exercise helps that.
So are you familiar with this disorder? What
well,
are the
okay,
treatments?
So, I mean, if she's got congestion in her Eustachian tubes, it's very likely there's a food allergy.
Oh, and you know what? That would be one of the first places that we would look, is to determine what food allergens
right.
she's
because
taking.
Because in kids who have frequent ear infections, it's a virtual home run
yeah.
to identify a food allergy, perhaps dairy or wheat or something like that.
Right, right. And also, well, I suppose she could benefit with some natural antihistamines.
Dehist is a good product.
Dehist is a good idea.
Yeah. That's a product we carry at drhoffman.com. If we mention
right.
products, we're often stocking them at drhoffman.com. So if you're curious, you'll find the product with the description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, this is...
Anti-inflammatories, if it's due to inflammation.
Possibly even something like Wobenzyme. You know, that could also reduce inflammation in the inner ear.
Boswellian curcumin. I'm very bothered that she's stopped exercising. Please begin to exercise again, even if your ear does get a little clogged up. If you do need to get that ear drained, what's wrong with that? I mean, I've had that done.
Yeah.
You know, get it done. Maybe that's what needs to happen. But beyond that, and certainly you shouldn't stop exercising because of mitral valve prolapse. A lot of people are walking around with MVP. It shouldn't be a problem, and exercise is only good for your heart. Right.
Okay, so we're nearing the end of this podcast, thankfully, because my voice seems to be giving out, and I think I've done a lot of talking this year. Would you say?
You've done a lot of talking this year.
I think
yes.
I'm entitled to like a little vocal rest.
Uh-huh.
So for this holiday, I think my first New Year's resolution is going to be to walk around carrying a chalkboard and like, or just I'll do a little Buddhist meditation retreat, a vow of silence for a day or two. Refresh my voice, because we got a lot to say in 2015.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And we wish you a very happy new year.
Yes, indeed, and a happy new year to you.
Thank you, and you too, Dr. Hoffman.
And it's a great year, of information, and a great collaboration. I think, you know, we've made a difference in the lives of a lot of patients at the Hoffman Center, and also listeners really seem to appreciate our discussions of timely issues. So we invite you to email us, radioprogram@AOL.com. Keep it going in 2015. We'll continue our weekly Q&A sessions with Layla, a popular feature at drhoffman.com among interviews with distinguished experts in the field of complementary and alternative medicine, as well as clinical-focused podcasts. We'll do more of those, too, in 2015. Have a great new year, and all the best to you, and hope that you... you're inspired to carry out your New Year's resolutions to be healthier and more balanced in 2015. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.